All right, so this is Mike Check, Mark Check, whatever you want to call it, Thursday show. I'm here with Mark Collette. We're just going to talk about whatever. So I guess right before we went live, we were just discussing gas prices and what it's like. So what is the economy gas prices like in the UK right now?
Well, things are shooting up, and for normal families, it's becoming unaffordable. So there was an article in the press today that said sort of the average tank of fuel is now over £100. Now, at one point, the average tank of fuel would have been about £60. So it's a big rise. And it's not just petrol and diesel. We've been told today that jet fuel is going to run out within the next sort of 8 to 10 days, which will basically ground our entire aviation industry. We've had a massive problem with what's called heating fuel. Yeah. Now, in remoter parts of the UK, people buy what's called heating oil, and heating oil heats homes in places like Scotland.
We have that here.
Parts of Wales.
We heat our homes with oil here,
That's more than doubled in price. It's gone from about... one of my friends was telling me that he needed to buy sort of £56 worth of heating fuel. And he went to buy it, and it had gone up, you know, it had gone up from about sort of 56-60p a litre to about 156 a litre. I don't know what it is now, whether it's gone back down at all, but they've taken emergency measures. So the Scottish government, because we have devolved government, so we have the government of sort of the United Kingdom, which is Great Britain and Northern Ireland, but we also have a government in Northern Ireland, a government in Scotland, and a government in Wales. And the Scottish government had brought in emergency measures to subsidise heating oil in remote parts of Scotland because people can't afford to heat their homes. Now, this is almost sort of a generational problem. And the last time we faced anything like this was probably 1979, which was known as the Winter of Discontent, when the strikes or strike action sort of, you know, disputes with employers grew to such a level, the country ground to a halt, and there was bins piling up in the streets. The Gravediggers Union went on strikes. So there was dead bodies piling up in freezer lorries. It was absolutely catastrophic, and that led to the Thatcher government coming in, and it sort of destroyed the Labour Party for 18 years. It took Labour 18 years to get back in. Thatcher came in 79, and Blair didn't get in until 1997. So, you know, almost a generational change there. And we're seeing something similar here. Now, obviously, if tomorrow the Strait of Hormuz opened, if Trump backed away from the brink, you could probably turn this around relatively quickly. But this kind of... I was talking about this on the David Duke show earlier today. David was kind of bemoaning this, but I actually said, in a way, as nationalists, we should embrace this because we were the people that said globalization, a global supply chain, offshoring every job, not producing anything ourselves and relying on cheap imports, you know, bringing in cheap foreign labor to do the dirty jobs while we did the, you know, the service industries, not dealing with our own goods and services. That was a big mistake. And we've been saying this since the 1960s. And it's kind of all come about and bitten us in the arse at this exact moment. And I think from a nationalist point of view, obviously, you don't want to go out there and say to the people, look, you deserve this. But at the same time, we have to be the ones that say, well, you kind of deserved it. And we kind of told you this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And you ignored us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in America, you know, people talk about how people grumble about it, but like, it's not that bad here. Like gas has gone up $1.20. Which, okay, that's, if you, like, for me, personally, it's not that bad. It's like, that's like 16 extra dollars every couple weeks that I fill up my tank, right? It's no big deal. For others, it's a very big deal. Like, for truck drivers, it's a huge deal because it takes a lot of money to fill up one of the big, these big 18-wheeler trucks. You know, one guy said, like, it went from $700 to, like, $1,000 to fill up his truck. That's going to cut into his profits. And, of course, eventually it's going to lead to the prices of goods being higher. But of course, America, the thing that Trump always brags about is like, we are insulated from it. And that's true, but we could be completely insulated from it But we won't do that because then the oil companies can't gouge you guys. And they want to do that. But the other thing is, it's like, but also if we were insulated from it, then that would make these sites, well, in the popular imagination, the reason for these wars, that would make it unnecessary, right? Because they think it's for oil, or they think we want to control the oil or something. But Trump is absolutely like, he's unconcerned with that. It's amazing how completely, if this is a war for oil, they seem totally unconcerned with the actual oil. And what is that? Unless you could, I guess you could finally argue, well, that's because they have a long-term plan. And of course, the whole like short-term pain, long-term gain. Of course, what's the long-term gain? There's no long-term gain for you or me, or for anybody. It's long-term gain for Jews and for Israel. But yeah, so I also heard that Australia is like basically on the brink of being out of petrol, as you guys say, being out of petrol, and we just call it gas. But yeah, it's just here, you know, people are going, and for the people that want to support it over here, they can, because they'll say, oh, what do you care about an extra dollar a gallon? Like, that's not that bad. And for a lot of people, it's not the worst. But, you know, ultimately, everything's going to go up. Like, food will go up. That's already happening. I mean, that already happened. Like, we already had a price shock with the Russia sanctions. People forget. If you could go back to 2021 prices, you would be amazed at how cheap both gas was and food, and probably in the UK too. So, yeah. So these the real driver of these inflationary spikes in events is the Jewish foreign policy. It's the wars. It's war with Russia. It's war with Iran. Those are the drivers of these kinds of inflationary, like, inflection points that cause just these dramatic sudden increase in prices, and they never normalize again. So we're just gonna be living with this. And I don't know what you guys are gonna do, because Trump isn't backing down, like, and neither are the Iranians, and nor should they, frankly. So yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, I kind of see this as us facing sort of a convergence of different catastrophes, mm-hmm. all at the same time. Yeah. And I'll give you a very Mark Collett's take on this. So when I was a boy and I was growing up, you would see sort of a new games console come out, like the Nintendo 64, and it'd come out for £250. And about a year or so later, it might drop to 150 or 200. And then it would be down eventually to sort of £99.99. And then a new console would come out. But there was a trajectory. It started high and went low. They've just announced that the PlayStation 5, every model of the PlayStation 5, is going to increase by $100 at retail in the next few weeks. Now, this is the only time in history where a console, during its natural lifespan, not when it's discontinued and somebody's got like the last mint sealed copy and it goes up at auction for like $20,000.
Right,
somebody's
right,
like,
right,
yeah,
right.
I want a brand new one. But I'm talking about in its actual natural lifetime, it's the only time we've ever seen a games console retail at, say, $400 and then eventually go up to sort of like $500, $550 and climb in price. Now, this tells you something about the economy that we're living in. Everything is being affected by what is going on. Trump has managed to make sure everything has gone up in price. He's doing it again with the conflict in Iran. Compounding this problem is scarcity and shortages, because we have a RAM shortage. There's a problem with the price of graphics cards. And this is just one tiny sector of the market I'm focusing on, but it's mirrored elsewhere. And because of this, all of the things that normal people enjoyed, all of the things that made normal people's lives a little bit easier, mm-hmm. a little bit more pleasurable, are all becoming out of reach. I'll give you another great sector. It's fast food. Now, this is a very normie take, but at one point, McDonald's was seen as what was known as recession-proof. So McDonald's was seen as a company that would never, ever suffer. McDonald's saw one of the first ever contractions in profits that they've ever seen recently. And it's because people can't afford these things anymore. And it, for it's too actually long,
expensive to eat fast food. I don't know if it was always that way, but it is now. People, economists have done studies on this.
When I was younger, a double cheeseburger cost £1. So if you went to the gym and you wanted to get some protein in, cheap hot protein on the way home, £3, you've got yourself three double cheeseburgers. Now, you go there now, I think it's around, it might be more now, but last time I went, which was quite a while ago, actually, because I can't afford to go there, it was £2.50 per double cheeseburger. It's more than doubled. It's not no longer, there's, I don't think there even is a pound saver menu anymore. That's what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Medium fries, 99p. Double cheeseburger, 99p. It's now £2.50. So three double cheeseburgers is £7.50. A Big Mac used to be about £2.50. So I used to go in there, grab two Big Macs after going to the gym. It was a fiver. Now, I think a Big Mac is about £6 or £7. It's now about £14 for two Big Macs. And the problem you've got is our society largely ignored problems like demographics, like the migrant crime rate. It ignored problems that we spoke about because of two things: bread and circuses. Because everyone could afford to buy themselves a new PlayStation and play their games with a McDonald's at their side. All of a sudden, those things are now being taken out of the reach of normal people. And once that happens, I think we're going to be presented with a strange opportunity. And look, I'm no fan of what Trump's doing. He's a despicable, horrible man. And personally speaking, you know, if I woke up tomorrow and I found out that he had a heart attack, I wouldn't be crying at all. But Trump is the guy that is bringing about the convergence of these catastrophes that we've warned about for decades. And maybe, just maybe, we're going to see a lot more people waking up, because it's not comfortable anymore. There's not the fast food. There's not the consumer electronics going super cheap. People are genuinely starting to struggle. And when you have the right economic conditions, you tend to see politics shift dramatically one way or the other. Now, hopefully we're not going to end up in sort of some, you know, Stalinist state. It would be nice to think that there would be something like what we're seeing in Germany and France, where a populist right, which does contain some genuine ethno-nationalists, could rise to the fore because of this.
They need to reject any Israeli influence. There's too much Benjamin Netanyahu shit all over those parties, because those Jews get their hooks into those groups. They see them coming up and they infiltrate them. And then, I mean, look, it happened to the alt-right, even, like, you know, like, Jews came, they tried to get in cozy with us. I saw them getting cozy with other people, right, that were doing, like, ethno-nationalist politics, white politics. And you would think, oh, they can't do that if you had the sort of, I mean, yes, Kevin McDonald's book is absolutely correct about how they view white, you know, a white society or a cohesive society. But because of that, that's why they will have, some of them will gravitate towards these kinds of movements and parties and try and infiltrate and subvert them and turn them, if at the very least, make them Zionists. And once you become that, as we see with someone like Tommy Robinson, that becomes your overriding concern. Like, I don't think he talks about anything else anymore. He's now just an Israel advocate. Like, he doesn't even really talk about anything else anymore.
He talks about one thing. He talks about how the biggest threats to society are the far left, the far right, and radical Islamists, as he calls them.
Right.
Because
so
basically, anyone that calls out Jewish power in any way.
Right. So what is use the is problem. He for the. What use is he? I mean, he's just a shill. He's just a liberal. He's a liberal. And he's a particularly odious Jewish shill liberal. And yeah, so. Yeah. And it's like, so we saw that. That's my main criticism of those groups in Europe. And I know that there are genuine people in them, but that you have to get rid of that Israeli influence, because Israel's not your friend. Because look at what's happening now. Like, they are willing to watch. Like, this is the thing I think people have a hard time, particularly people that think the foreign policy of the United States is about oil and gas. Now, it has been in the past. There have been things done on behalf of oil and gas interests or just to retain Western control, whether it be American or just Anglo-American control, whether it be American or British control. Like, people talk about the 1953 thing in Iran. However, interesting fact, I don't know if you ever heard of this guy, Clement Attlee's defense secretary, his name is Manny Shinwell, he was a Jew. He was the guy who wanted to invade Iran in 1951 and seize the BP oil fields from Mossadegh. And then, you know, he was not in power, I guess, was Attlee was defeated in 1951, I guess, and Churchill took back over then in 52. And of course Churchill, as we already know, was in the power of Jews, and it is true that I guess they would say it was the CIA that did it. It was more that it was the British that did it, because they had connections from the imperial days with the Iranian military, and they convinced they strongly convinced Mossadegh he had to resign, and he did under pressure from them, among other things. But yeah, it's funny that I just learned that yesterday. I didn't know who Manny Shinwell was until I learned about it. I don't know if you'd heard of if you knew about him before,
I did not know. I didn't know about that. But it wouldn't surprise me to know that he wanted to steal other people's oil. I mean, that's... Yeah.
Well, they said it was theirs because it was like, well, BP developed these fields. It's like, well, yeah, when Iran was a colony, they're not a colony anymore. It's their oil, like, you know, whatever. And so, you know, is Keir Starmer, like, I know that he's like making a big show of like, it's not our war. He's like standing up to Trump. Is that helping his popularity at all? I kind of doubt it is.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it is. I mean, okay. Look, Keir Starmer, you'll often see in Britain the right call being made for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So Starmer's anti-Iranian war stance, which is the right stance, to be against a war in Iran is unquestionably the right stance. But it's not being made because he doesn't want to help Israel. His stance is because the Muslim power bloc at local level has been something that has kept Labour in power for quite some time mm-hmm. now, especially on a lot of local councils. And now we're seeing other parties that are more anti-Zionist step in and take that block vote. So really, he's not doing it because he wants to put two fingers up to Israel. He's doing it because he doesn't want to lose the Muslim bloc vote. And this is kind of an interesting situation that we have here in the UK, and we also have in other countries, is that other countries now are very, very slow to want to appease Israel when it comes to military strikes, because the Muslim population is so well organized when it comes to elections, but it's also extremely volatile and likely to engage in acts of civil disobedience and potentially riots and or even terrorism. And, you know, I discussed this a few times on my stream because people will say, well, isn't it great that such a high percentage of young Britons are, you know, anti-Zionist? And I had a guest on who's really, really well read on the issues of demography. And he said, well, on the surface, that sounds good. But when you realize that directly correlates with how close we are to being a minority in schools and how many Muslims and ethnic minority youngsters there are in the country, it's kind of worrying because on the surface, yeah, based, but dig a little bit deeper, a lot of the people holding these opinions are the ones brought here to replace us, which again sparks the interesting conversation. How short-sighted was the Jewish plan to wreck countries like Britain, France, and Germany?
Well, the answer is, frankly, they don't need you. I not to be, you know, like they need my country. I mean, it's just the facts. Like that, because we don't have that many Muslims. But I'll say this: I think that maybe it should be, because maybe it's just different here. But in a lot of ways, the demographics are different, even though whites are declining, generally speaking. But in America, the rise in anti-Zionism is almost entirely happening among whites, because there is anti-Zionism, like people younger than a certain age just aren't for it. And the reason is because they didn't really have much more ground that could be taken. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have any, like, they've actually recovered slightly with Latinos and blacks because they've been paying a lot of Latino and black politicians. So we have these young pro-Israel Democrats who, like, this guy Richie Torres, he's a gay Puerto Rican from New York City. He's, like, the most Zionist you could have. He's just being paid off. And so they see that there's money here, and blacks are doing it too increasingly. They're doing that. Where, you know, it's actually, like, the younger white kids who are, like, incorruptibly in their principles who will just stay, like, against Israel. And so, and it's on right and left that it's happening here. And it actually is if you look at generationally, you see, you know, boomer generations of all races like Israel more, and the younger generation of all races like Israel less. But it's not like there's no advantage there's no racial advantage for Jews among whites in terms of their popularity in America among younger people. Like, everybody hates them the same. And so I would just, like, I understand that argument. And the one problem I have with it, and it might just be true, but it doesn't mean people should support Israel, because a lot of times people take that argument and they make it like, well, now we can support Israel, or we can appeal to these Jews and say, look, we're your friends. Like, we'll be good to stop ruining our country. Stop importing these people, or let us deport them. And then, you know, then you'll be good. Then we'll all support Israel. And I'm like, I will never support Israel. But additionally, like, that's also sort of like forfeiting your own sovereignty. And the whole point is that you have sovereignty and they don't. But I would actually just, I would question whether it's just correlated or whether there's actual research into what the actual opinions are. I know America is very different.
I can give you a very interesting statistic from Germany, actually, because Germany, in some ways, especially when it comes to elections, they do some very, very detailed polling of different demographics. Now, Germany is a very diverse country. They say that Germany is 70% German. So they mean 30% of the people there are of migrant descent. But migrant descent in Germany means that you have one or more parent that was born outside of Germany. So if you have two black parents or two Turkish parents that were both born on German soil and had German passports from birth,
you're German, yeah.
Their children are German. So this kind of muddies the water. And I would suggest that if the state are telling people that 70% of the population are German and 30% have a migrant background, there will be probably 4, 5, 6% minimum of people who are not white or of mixed race origin. And both parents, though, were born in Germany and had German passports from birth. So it muddies the water. Britain is far better in statistical terms in looking at actual race and ethnicity.
It's illegal in Germany to look at race.
It might be. Yeah. But one thing that the Germans do very well is keep statistics on how people vote and voting intention. And one of the worrying things in Germany is the most popular party amongst young Germans is Die Linke, which literally translates as the left.
Yeah.
And they are supported mainly by left-wing whites and young migrants, especially young Turks. They support that party because it's a pro-immigration party. And my concern is
this. Also a totally Jewish-run party.
Yeah, most likely. But my concern is this. I fear that some of the populist right parties in Europe are going to present an option that essentially, if you are anti-immigration, you have to be pro-Zionist as well. And my only concern going forward with this kind of awakening you're seeing is that there'll be this pushback where the option, it'll be a very disingenuous series of options, but the option presented will be, well, you're either pro-migrant, pro-multicultural, anti-Zionist, or you are pro-German, you're anti-immigration, and bundled in with that will be pro-Zionism. Yeah. And it'll be, we must protect the Jewish minority from the Muslim minority. And the mental divorce there for a lot of people will be that the state, the powers that be, and people like Tommy Robinson are trying to divorce mm-hmm. the fact that Zionists were the ones that brought the migrants here from, you know, from the actual groups of migrants. So they're divorcing that reality. They're saying, look, the Zionists are divorced from the migrants, when in fact,
yeah, their new Jewish victimization myths come out of this. I would actually say there's nothing to fear because it's already happened. Like, for the most part, that's why the Israeli influence and the subversion of these parties is exactly that. And there are people then who sort of like intuitively on their own make this deal, like they think that they're at some bargaining table and they're like, oh, well, and people ask me, well, Mike, you always say Jews are on this or that. Well, why would they then bring Muslims into Europe if they, and I'm like, well, one, Europe isn't as a, one, they hate Europe. Okay. Jews hate Europeans in Europe. So they're happy to mix the cultures up. Plus, we all understand the points about how Jews thrive in multicultural societies. Everyone's read Kevin MacDonald. We all understand that. And if you don't, then you should read that and understand that. So understand that first, that Jews want diversity. They thrive in diversity because if they don't want to be the only minority, because that's never been good for them. And so being one of many minorities is like a disguise for them. So then they don't stand out and they can just be, and then they can even go back to their old thing of being the victims. So despite the fact that they are running the parties, both parties, left and right, they're running the media and they're in pretty firm control of the government. They can present themselves to the right as, well, we are actually now victims. And is these leftists, these liberals, these blinkered liberals that are victimizing Jews yet again. And look at the left-wing anti-Semitism and such like that. Now, in America, America is very different because Muslims are not a significant minority here. And as a result, like these politics are not as clear. Like, and Jews openly make the appeal to minorities here as well. That what do the Palestinians ever do to you? This has become something they've actively made appeals to blacks where they're like, Palestinians hate blacks. There's a black neighborhood in Palestine where they call the blacks slaves. And you know, I don't know how well it works, but it's also like blacks as a demographic just are captured by the Democrat Party because they just have an apparatus to get them to the polls. It's not really anything more than that. But in terms of like popularity, so it's different here than it is in Europe. But even so, here people still were imagining themselves as making that bargain. They'll say like, I've even seen people say like, well, if the price is bombing some Middle Eastern country every once in a while in exchange for, you know, mass deportation, I'm like, all right, so when are you getting these mass deportations? When is that happening? Because as right now, the other thing is, and Kevin Deanna made this point in one of his podcasts the other day where he was like, who are you bargaining with? Were you not? I mean, I've been making this point for years that you're not sitting at the bargaining table with anybody. What you're like Trump negotiating with no one. Like there's no one. You're like, I've been in negotiations with the Jews about whether we get deportations if I support Zionism or not. And there's no one at the other end of the table. And in fact, it's gotten so bad. It's like a meme now. And if anybody tries to promote that argument, they just get piled on and dumped on. Like, yeah, nah, because one, Trump has been such a drastic failure on immigration. And then this on top of it. And we don't have the same kind of a Muslim issue that muddies the waters here that you do. The problem here is almost exclusively blacks and South Americans. And the Muslims here don't cause problems. Like there's not really a criminal element among them. They're mainly in a couple areas and they're not really a criminal element. So, and if they are a criminal element there, it's just their problem there. It's not like a national problem. Right. So it's just different. But, one thing I'll say is additionally, not only this, but I just made a video recently about there was a meeting of this thing called the heads of the Jewish the presidents of the major Jewish groups in America, there's a complicated long name for this group, I forget what it is, they had a meeting, and you know, you can find these meetings and you can watch them. And Information Liberation, if you've ever seen that account, he's on Twitter, he's on Telegram. Great. Chris Menahan, great guy. Love the website, and he always does finds the best video clips of these Zionist Jews saying the wildest shit. And he put a clip from a meeting they had just the other day where some woman from Israel, who is a correspondent for the Times of Israel, was talking to these Jews, these presidents of the major Jewish organizations of America. You don't know who these people are. You know, I've never seen them before. And they were talking about how right now they have the progressive groups really worked up about ICE. And this is good because now they're not focusing on Israel. So they are actively promoting. So like far from them wanting to make a deal with you about immigration in exchange for you supporting Zionism, they are actively promoting the anti-ICE protests and the anti-ICE groups in America because they understood that once they got the Gaza ceasefire, they had a period of time before all the images of the dead kids and the slaughter and the blood from Palestine was erased from people's memories. Now they're focused on this other issue. And they had this big protest just last weekend, this No Kings protest. The two women that run it are Jews, and they made it not about the war, not about Israel, because they know if they make it about the war, Israel's going to come up. They made it about not Trump. We don't like Trump. We don't like Trump policies. And of course, the major contingent, activist contingent that joined those protests was people left over from the previous mobilization against ICE and the anti and the pro-immigration stuff that were going to protest immigration raids and putting migrants in prison and stuff like that. And so that's what it became about. The only guy that made an anti-war speech, as far as I know, was the Jew, Bernie Sanders. So, like, it's total controlled opposition. And once you have to understand how they play both of it. And they're not on your side. They're on their side. And they will do something like that. So right now, the Zionist Jews are bragging about how they're promoting anti-ICE protests because it's getting the liberals off their back. So they're not complaining about Gaza children getting killed. They're not complaining about Palestinian kids getting blown up. They're talking about ICE. They're talking about don't deport these Mexicans. That's what they're involved in. And he's saying it's allowing us to build a bridge back to the progressives. So that's what they're not interested. They don't, they're never going to give you what you want. You know, like it's to me when I see this stuff, I'm like, do you see how it works? And I'm sure they do things like this in the UK. I mean, there's Jews probably all over some of these left-wing parties. I know that the whole pro-Palestine movement has Jews crawling all over it in order to make it so it's just, you know, let's just criticize Israel, like, surface level. We'll not criticize Jews. Like, God knows you can't insinuate that they control the government or anything like that. So, yeah. Anyway, take.
Well, I think what you said there is really important, and I think this is something a lot of nationalists miss, is that these seemingly sort of helpful left-wing movements that will talk about certain issues are all co-opted. Now, I've actually spoken to a number of people in the anti-Israel, anti-Zionist movement, or who have tried to enter, or who have been a part of the anti-Zionist movement. And they will tell you immediately, if they're good faith actors, that the anti-Zionist movement in the UK is largely run by left-wing Jews, and their narrative is quite clear. They will oppose Zionism as long as Zionism is put forward as a white supremacist
colonialist
political ideology that is an extension of America's colonialist power. And if it's not put in those terms, they won't engage with people. So I actually know Palestinians living in Britain that have been like, great, let's get involved in the pro-Palestine anti-Zionist movement. And they've basically been thrown out for talking about Jewish power. And people who enter the pro-Palestinian movement and refuse to blame Zionism on white colonial racism, they are either pushed out of the movement or they're completely sidelined. So this movement is under the control of Jews. I also know people who have been in the pro-Palestinian movement, and they've told me you know, fundraisers have been run for people. And I've actually seen the messages to back this up. The fundraisers have been run for people who have been arrested or have been harassed by the police. But those people have then spoken about Jewish power or refused mm-hmm. to condemn Zionism yep. as a white power structure. And the fundraisers have then been returned to people, and sort of a whispering campaign has gone on that you cannot support this particular Palestinian because they are anti-Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most frustrating things that I've experienced is whatever side you're on, unless you're us or a few of the genuine Palestinians, you are basically under the control mm-hmm. of Jewish organizers. So if you look at the anti-migration groups as a whole, especially like the Tommy Robinson movement, which is the biggest street movement in Britain, and he is being so well funded now, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But his narrative is the Zionists are the good guys, they're killing the Muslims. But then if you go to the anti-Zionist movement and say, well, actually, you know, I'm against Tommy Robinson, I'm a genuine nationalist, we're here to help, they will say, well, you can't help because we're blaming white people and we're writing Zionism up as a white supremacist mm-hmm. ideology. So wherever you turn, you are basically, unless you're like us, who are banned from everything, we're out on the very fringes, we're not allowed to organize, we're not allowed X accounts, we're not allowed on YouTube, we are like the debanked, travel banned pariahs. Unless you're us, you are in some way being corralled and directed by different Jewish interests.
Yes.
And this makes it very difficult. So if you are somebody speaking out against Zionism and you are given the mainstream coverage, they allow that on the basis that you lead it back to some kind of anti-white narrative. So white people are the ones, despite it not being anything to do with us, we should feel guilty for the slaughter in Gaza because it's more colonialism, it's more apartheid, it's more white supremacy. But if you are for an anti-immigration cause, the only way to do that is by supporting Israel because they're killing the Palestinians. And at this point, it's very, very frustrating yeah. and very hard work. And in May, you're going to have about 300,000 people go to London to support Tommy Robinson. And his cry is essentially this. He's morphed now into full-on sort of
yep.
conservative.
He's in his final form, yeah.
If you sat down with, say, Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the Conservatives, if Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage sat down, they would both tell you they want to reduce immigration from Muslim countries. They want to strengthen the multicultural ties in Britain. So mm-hmm. the people who've come here have to be integrated and get on, and they're here for good. And there is going to be a pro-Israel and pro-Zionist power base. So it's three things, really. Pro-Zionism, anti-migration from select countries, which won't amount to anything because there's so many here already and there's so many coming from places like India that they dwarf the numbers coming from Pakistan and Bangladesh anyway. And then
you're not getting anybody from Syria anymore, and you might even get some of them leaving now.
You get some of them, but the point is legal migration vastly outstrips right. illegal migration, and most of the legal migration comes from four countries. It comes from India, it comes from Nigeria, comes from China, and then it does come from Pakistan. So you may be taking one of those main sources out. But, you know, the Nigerians, the Chinese and the Indians dwarf the number of Pakistanis coming in. I don't want any of them coming in. But really, Tommy Robinson would agree with Farage. And their solution now is to build a multicultural society free from what he calls the real far right, free from what he calls Islamists, and free from what he calls the far left, essentially leaving you with exactly what Kemi Badenoch or Nigel Farage would want, which is still a fundamentally multicultural mm-hmm. society where we are on the trajectory to being a minority. And there's this idea now being pushed upon white people that if we support Israel, if we integrate, and if we just get rid of a few bad Muslims, everything will go back to the way it was in the 1980s and we'll all live happily ever after. When in fact, we are now around 25 years away from being a minority. And this new line being pushed by the gatekeepers and the controlled opposition, I believe, is a line that is being pushed solely to get us over that historic milestone. Because once we're a minority, it's going to be almost impossible to push us back.
You want to know something funny about Nigeria, being that that's the main source of immigration? It's a pro-Israel country. And in fact, really? 60% of people in Nigeria support Israel. And because Israel has a relationship with Nigeria, and there's a burgeoning Protestant movement in Protestant Zionist Christians have been proselytizing to Africa and to South America. So talk about third worldist. Increasingly, Christian Zionism is third worldist because they have been recruiting people from like El Salvador and like South America and Central America, and they've also recruited a lot of people from Nigeria. So Nigeria it's one of the only African countries, has a positive view of Israel. And in fact, it has a more positive view of Israel than most countries in Europe. I think, though, that the other thing is, like, it's not like Israel had a great rep before the Muslims came in. If anything, they boosted its rep amongst whites because now it became like a culture war issue. Like, if there wasn't a bunch of Muslims, why would you like Israel? Why would you, like, you know, you would just be like...
Well, look, that's the other thing. So, yeah. So Tommy Robinson has got this very, very sort of cunning plan, which does fool a lot of working class people.
It does fool them,
he will say, look, hundreds of thousands of your, you know, daughters, sisters, hundreds of thousands of white British girls have been raped by men who were overwhelmingly of Muslim descent. Thus, you don't like the Muslims. They'll say, well, yeah, agreed. Now, the solution is to deport those people. Tommy's solution is like, well, look, we're not in the position to deport them, but why don't we cheer on the nation that's killing Muslims in the Middle East? Because, you know, this is us versus the Muslims. You know, if we cheer on the nation that's bombing Gaza, bombing Lebanon, bombing Syria, ha, this is an own, isn't it? So these guys are like, really, are they doing that? Wow, well, they must agree with us. So we'll pick up an Israeli flag in solidarity with the nation fighting the Muslims. But then what Tommy doesn't tell them is every time Israel bombs a Muslim nation, Muslims pour into Europe. So it's almost like these wars for Israel or these Israeli bombing campaigns are the broom that sweeps Muslims out of the Middle East into Europe. But white working class people in places like Britain support them because they are told that they're standing in solidarity with the world's most anti-Muslim nation. And this is why Tommy is so well paid. This is why he's driving around in a Bentley.
Epstein said he was cheap at any price. But, like, it meaning that, like, the any price you paid for the services he was rendering to the Jews is worth it. So, I mean, this hasn't come up, I assume, right? That Jeffrey Epstein gave a personal recommendation to Tommy Robinson that this is in the files. This is not really hindered him.
Tommy Robinson compared to other politicians that he worked with, would be a cheap target. You know, for Tommy Robinson, he wouldn't mind a few pairs of designer shoes, a few pairs of, designer jeans, a nice jacket, a nice T-shirt, you know, a few beers, the takeaways. Tommy Robinson buying Tommy Robinson wouldn't be the same as buying Bill Gates or Bill Clinton or Donald Trump. And I should imagine
he's probably upped his prices in recent years, but still.
Well, I think they'd have total contempt for Tommy Robinson.
They obviously do.
When he goes to Israel, they talk down to him like he's their dog. They insult him on shows and make him look foolish.
I mean, they should. He is their dog, and he should feel foolish.
And he is a fool.
Yeah, he should. And he's fooling others. And people that are fooled by him should feel the fool too. It's hard to make these arguments, though, because people get so high strung about it and emotional, but you just have to push through it and just keep doing it. Like, people are going to hate you. Some people are going to really hate you, like viciously hate you for saying these things. And you just, that's okay. I can live with it. I've got a thick skin. I know you've got a thick skin. So you just have to do it, right? Like, you just got to keep making the right argument. And it sucks. Now, one thing I'll say is, remarkably, though, there's two groups that have not flooded into Europe after being bombed by Israel, and that's Palestinians and Iranians. And Lebanese, frankly, too. At least not in these recent wars. I know there are Lebanese, but they're not nearly as numerous as, like, Pakistanis and Palestinians. There's not.
Well, we
many
actually
of
have
them.
A lot of Iranians in the UK, and believe it or not, Mike, you're going to love this. Recently, the Conservatives. So we're coming up to an election period. Our elections are on usually, almost always. There are a couple of exceptions in the past, but usually they are on the first Thursday in May, when there are a council election or a mayoral election, and often general elections and European elections sort of were brought into line to coincide with them, or the council elections, in the case of the European elections, were sometimes moved to coincide with them. But it's usually the first Thursday of May. And being somebody who's deeply embedded in politics, I knew about this. So the Conservatives have just filmed and released a party political broadcast.
Yeah, well, you showed it's it on the show I did with you last week. You played
did
it.
I play that yeah. one? Yeah. So you've literally got a black Niger. I think it's Nigeria she came from, but I might not be sure on that.
Whatever.
You've got a black Conservative Party leader, an African Conservative Party leader who regards herself as a first generation migrant, walking through an area where Iranians are stood celebrating in the streets with Jews, mm-hmm. and this black leader of the Conservatives is saying, "This is what we want. This is the best of Britain." Iranians and Jews celebrating a Zionist war in the Middle East.
Yeah, that's
and you're watching
that's good. Yeah.
It tells you everything you. But this is the conservative narrative, and this may shock you, but Tommy Robinson was there.
That doesn't
he wasn't with Kemi Badenoch, but he was at some of these street parties.
I've seen them
with the Iranians. Yeah. He was saying we need more Iranian immigration.
Yeah, Iranians don't cause any problems. Yeah,
Iranians don't cause any problems. His narrative now is:
I'll say, well, they cause a problem because they're all pro-Zionist. Now, well, wasn't the only thing I'll say
lot
about
of the
that
Iranian in our country,
yeah.
in Britain, are pro-Zionist
yeah,
because
I know, yeah.
they're ones that fled
yeah.
the Iranian regime.
Yeah.
But shockingly, Iranians in Britain are 18 times more likely to be arrested for sexual crimes than white British men.
That's why they
so
fled
why
the Islamic
is Tommy
Republic.
Robinson, why is Tommy Robinson calling for more of them to come here? Because he's meant to be the anti-rape gang guy.
Well, he also wants, it's just general, I mean, he's calling for it, but it's also like a general sort of pro-war thing. Like, we're freeing the Iranian people, like, and wouldn't it be great? The Iranian people are such wonderful people. Now, of course, he's also then going to be on board with Trump and Hegseth talking about bombing them into the Stone Age. So are they wonderful people, or are we bombing them into the Stone Age? Which is it? And he also wanted to, he was talking about the demonstrations in favor of the, after they killed the Ayatollah, all of them. I mean, they've been doing them every day, actually. They haven't stopped. Every day there's giant demonstrations in Iran, despite being bombed. Like, they're still out in the streets, and Tommy Robinson's like, just strafe the demonstrations. Like, okay, so you're just, it's a criminal. It's a criminal. It's an evil person. Now, the point I made is that, like, there has not been in this war a flood of refugees. Like, the Iranians are not going into other countries because of this. They're staying in their own country, like the Palestinians did in Gaza. So these are people we should admire. Now, forget the people that ran away, for the Shah supporters that ran away. Those people are traitors. Those people are, I mean, I just, they're just, I, Iranian diaspora are just scum. Like, they're scumbags. They're Zionists. A lot of them are Jewish. And those that aren't are just...
Many of them are criminals.
They're completely...
Well,
yeah, they're organized crime. Yeah, as you said, they're doing sex crimes. They're doing these things. Of course they fled the Islamic Republic. They don't want to get beheaded. They probably should be. You know, I mean, look, if they're criminals, you know, the punishment can fit the crime. You know, they talk about this excessive capital punishment in Iran. Well, not really. I mean, it's actually not nearly as extreme as they tell you. They execute like a couple hundred people a year. I mean, if we actually executed criminals in our country, how many would that be, right? Like, I mean, look at how many murders there are in the United States. There's like 15,000 a year. If we executed murderers, you know, we'd have that many executions a year. So they vastly overestimate all of these things to an order to make. And again, also, that's not my problem. Iranian criminal justice is the last thing that's my problem, right? And that's a natural idea that people have unless they're exposed to this and they're exposed to propaganda talking about what a great injustice this is. And they want to trip you up on that. Like, I saw some guy posts like, oh, like, I'm loving the fact. It's like a meme of some guy dancing around. He's like, me dancing while he ran, like, defeats the Epstein Empire or something like that. Drew Pavlou, that fucking guy, that Turk, gets all angry. And he's like, you know, dancing is illegal in Iran. It's like, who gives a shit? Who fucking cares? It's like, and it, you know, it's just like this bitter, like, asshurt. Like, that's not my problem. First of all, it's not really, yes, it's that technically, but I'm not even going to argue that. Who cares? So what? We're going to bomb them for that? Is that why it is? I mean, it's so funny. This article came out in Chronicles Magazine by this guy, Scott Greer, who is like a big Trump, he's a big Trump guy, right? And it was like, Iran is woke. And it's like, Iran is woke. It's like, bro, they have been doing woke anti-Iran agitation for 30 years. Talking about women have to wear headscarves and the sexes are separate and they're so sexually repressed and, it, you know, it's illegal to be gay and all this stuff and they castrate homosexuals there and things like this. And it's like, again, none of these things are my problem. And so it's like you can't then turn around and, you know, again, just trying to leverage the previous sort of like psyops that they were using on people to now leverage them to get them just to support this thing. It's not really working. It's not really popular in America. It's sort of disappointing that they managed to get it up to like the high 30% in terms of support. I don't know what the popularity of it is in Britain. I don't know how successful Tommy Robinson has been. I can't imagine it's that popular, though, because people are... I mean, what? Why would it be, right? I mean, I don't know. Is it? I mean, are conservatives going for it?
I don't think it is. What I always use as a gauge for support for Israel is the Daily Mail comment section. Mm. Because the Daily Mail reader is the typical Zio boomer.
Yeah.
And the Zio boomer has this unshakable faith in two things. Voting in Israel. That's all he built. You know, above all else, the Zio boomer will tell you, you can go out there, you can trust in democracy, and you can trust in Israel. And that's why we're in the mess we're in. But of late, the Zio boomer has started to question things. And if you read the Daily Mail comment section as religiously as I do, yes, you do see a lot of downvotes still popping up on anti-Israel posts, but it's gone from being negatively downvoted to more upvotes than downvotes. And you're starting to see the odd, carefully worded anti-Israel post even topping the most popular post of the day on some stories. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, they're still... So the way it calculates it is if the most popular post has got 1,000 upvotes and 1,000 downvotes, it will be simultaneously the most popular and least popular post at the same time. So it's not mathematically done. So if you get 1,000 upvotes and 800 downvotes, it doesn't rank it as well. You've got net 200 positive. It's just, well, you've got the most upvotes, but then if you click view worst rated, it'll appear with the most downvotes as well. But you're seeing the most upvoted posts now being anti-Zionist, and you're seeing still a lot of downvotes on them. But it tells you that people who used to be completely locked in to the Zio voting, we must support Israel, it's the only democracy, they're losing their patience. But one thing you said earlier, and I was going to jump in, but I didn't want to cut you off in the middle of your flow. But you said something really important, and that was that people like Tommy Robinson have been saying, just strafe the crowds, just bomb the crowds. Mm. Where are the bombers when these Iranians are out in the street?
Yeah, innocent people are out in the street, yeah.
But the interesting point about this, Mike, is people have been arrested for chanting death to the IDF.
Right, and so, that's a military organization.
And that's a foreign army. So saying that a foreign army that has been found guilty by the UN of committing genocide, you can't say death to the IDF, even though they have committed genocide, they have killed civilians, they have killed aid workers and journalists. You can't say death to
British
the IDF.
Citizens.
That's a public order offence. But Tommy Robinson can tweet out, strafe them, bomb them, and it isn't a public order offence, which again tells you just how embedded in the state he is, because, or at least given a pass. Because I can tell you this now, if I posted a post on my Telegram saying, you know, there was a crowd of people in Tel Aviv today, it's a shame, you know, a 400 strong drone swarm didn't, you know, come over and kill them all. If I posted
hypothetically,
right. if I posted something like that, which I never have and never would, I would be arrested pretty quickly.
Right.
You know, if not same day, next day. But Tommy Robinson can call for civilians to be killed, and he is given an absolute pass every time.
Yeah.
And it again tells you about the power structure, but he's fighting an uphill battle because, as I said, even these Zio boomers are now starting to upvote comments like, this is Israel's fault. This is another war for Israel. We need to stop doing Israel's bidding. Now, at one point, shaking the boomers' sort of faith in Israel would be impossible because they used to come out with all of the Ben Shapiro talking points, you know, the only democracy in the Middle East, the last line of defense before militant Islam gets to the West. Obviously, they're not the last
line of
defense.
But isn't militant Islam there? Isn't that also their argument that it's already there? And it is already there. That's the other thing. It is there because this is another thing. Just so, like, there's a lot of reasons why Jews wanted to bring Muslims to Europe. One of them is because they had a lot of Pakistani Sunni Muslims in Europe already, in Britain in particular already. And they wanted to recruit Sunni Muslims into ISIS and other groups like that to go and fight against Iranian interests and proxy groups in the Middle East. And so they actually allowed radical, insanely radical preachers funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the UAE in these mosques in Britain, like Abu Hamza and Anjem Chowdhury, among others, to preach absolute hate and terror and actual terrorists. And were at least Anjem Chowdhury was at least accused, I think, of recruiting for ISIS out of his mosque. And so that was what he was doing. And because they had a whole bunch of warm bodies, young Pakistani men, and like, well, what are they doing here? We can get them over there, going and get them to fight Iranian interests for Israel in the Middle East, thinking that they're going to do some heroic thing or go fight Bashar Assad, go fight against Bashar Assad, go take over the Assad government, the last government opposite, the last government adjacent to Israel that's oppositional to it. So the pipeline from Iran to Hezbollah in Lebanon. That was why they were allowed. I didn't even connect those dots myself because for a long time I was like, yeah, I get why Jews want multiculturalism, but this is ridiculous. And it's just also, isn't the UK at some point going to step in here? Like the kinds of crap these guys are saying. And eventually they did. It got to be too much, but like it went on way longer than you would ever be. And again, that builds this idea in people's mind that like there's this, that Muslims are running the government or something, or they have this, they are privileged, I guess, in a way. They are, so that is not an illusion that they do get certain privileges, certainly above white people, but like that they're in power and that they're invading and they're taking us over, and now Israel is going to be like the last ally in this fight, and it's just all this, it's this confusion, all of this, just this mess and confusion. It's just created by this Jewish element, because there's Jews all over every part of this, and Jewish intelligence agencies, Jewish controlled opposition, left wing Jews, right wing Jews, they're all over every aspect of this. And you can see it when you look and when you understand it. It's a little complicated to understand, but it's not that complicated to understand, right? Like you can get it once it's explained to you. Like you don't have to be a genius to understand it. Maybe you don't have the wherewithal to figure it out yourself or research it yourself, But once it's presented to you, the information is there. You can absorb it and you can understand it. And anybody can see that Tommy Robinson is a shill for Israel. And that he should, and he doesn't really give a shit about white people anymore at all. In fact, he barely talks about it, if at all. Interestingly,